All right, on this episode of Bouks Talkin' Bouts, excited to be talking to an individual set to headline BKFC 42, which goes down on May the 12th, and a very intriguing bout with Tyler Goodjohn knuckling up and toeing the line against Tony Soto, and happy to have Tony on the show. How's your day going, man?
It's going pretty well, man. Had some really good training this morning with some really tough and very skillful teammates, and day's going really well. How about you, brother?
I'm doing good, man. Appreciate you asking, but I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about those, you know, skilled teammates you were getting in that work with. Like, who have you been putting in those hard rounds with?
You know, you got me and Truck and Carson. I know you guys are very familiar with Truck and Carson and his battle with Rynell Riley. We also got Ryan Jett. He's a BYB fighter. He's also a really, really another really explosive fighter. Very skillful, great hands. You got Jeff Henry, another really good local fighter. There's a couple other heads that do not want to be mentioned due to the fact that they're making their bare knuckle debut as well. And they didn't even want to be in the picture today because of that. But yeah, very good day, very good day.
Well, I love hearing that, man. And it seems like just a, you know, great time in general. Like, I was seeing an article just a bit ago where you were talking about how you weren't necessarily surprised to see this Tyler Goodjohn fight come about, and it seemed like one where you were looking at it like, you know, one day our paths are gonna cross. I'm curious, why did you have that perception that you guys would eventually fight?
Well, you know, after my second bare knuckle fight, I actually wanted to fight Tyler. I thought it would be really good for the fans, and I thought it'd be a true test to my abilities and help me grow as a fighter as well. We asked for this fight a long time ago. I figured if it didn't happen back then, it was eventually going to happen. I was looking more forward actually to fighting Tom Schoaf because before even my very first fight, I ran into him in Alabama, shook his hand. I said, one day me and you were going to fight. And I said it right to his face. And I was a little let down after my last bout where I was told me and him were supposed to knuckle up, and it didn't happen. But you know, you just like the fight, you know, you roll with the punches and you go and get what you got. And I got Tyler, so I got something out of it.
And it's curious because also within that article I was referencing, it seems like you're looking at this fight as an opportunity to really like vault yourself towards being that next lightweight title contender. And I don't necessarily know that they're, I guess, still getting in that work, but I knew like Luis Palomino and Tyler Goodjohn were training for a little bit. So it kind of jives together in that sense. Like there's a little bit of a narrative kind of attachment in a way, but also obviously facing a very, you know, high level opponent. Have you been kind of thinking of some of those facets with this, just in as far as being able to facilitate getting that title shot?
You know, I feel like it would only make sense, you know, if I become 5-0, you got to think about it organically. I would be, besides Palomino, the only other 155er who started in the organization who's still undefeated at that, you know, at that level. And I feel like it would only be, you know, fair for them to give me the title shot, to give me Palomino, if not Palomino, me versus Lily for the title right there. You know, if he's not gonna defend his 155 and defend his 165, I think that'll make the most sense if you ask me.
Yeah, and I feel like this is like one of the bigger name value wins, and obviously, like I said, fighting a guy who previously fought for the title, so definitely could make sense to see you also get a, you know, subsequent shot.
No, yeah, I agree. I also think, you know, I'm one of the only guys who actually came from tryouts and has been headlining a BKFC card, you know. That's an eye-opener at itself, you know. So.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so many facets of this fight that I, you know, do want to get into, but I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't at least briefly, you know, touch on the last performance at BKFC 35, because that seemed like a comprehensive performance there in January, getting that, you know, fourth round doctor stoppage and everything. Like, what were the main takeaways from that last fight and everything?
Well, I feel like, you know, I took a little bit to get into my rhythm. He was very slick. You know, I try to be more explosive. And, you know, when I kind of settled down a little bit, I started opening my eyes, I started seeing everything. And that's when I was able to, you know, pretty much pot shot him. And as you've seen, I was slipping punches, going under punches. I started seeing everything. I knew where he was putting his head. So instead of punching for the, you know, instead of going for the hook high, I threw a hook towards the chest because I knew he kept ducking his head. He put his face right there. That's where he quit. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd be curious to get some of your thoughts on this, because just in checking out some past articles where people have been talking to you and just asking about the undefeated streak, like, you seem a little bit like nonchalant, maybe nonplussed about it. Like, it's like, oh, you know, just another day, just putting in hard work, trying to get better. But it almost seems like within that, that you're looking at, I guess, yourself as the ultimate kind of opponent, quote unquote. Like, it seems like you're very oriented to, I guess, constructively criticizing what you're doing and trying to fix the little holes in your game. Like, would you say that's a fair characterization of how you approach everything?
Yeah, that's actually a really good way to put it. I think I'm, and will always be, my own critic. I'm the worst. Like, I look at myself and I find ways to beat myself. And when I go and train, I look at those holes that I was doing and I fix them and I try to patch those holes. So it can be, you know, it's to the point where I'm searching for perfection. Nothing in this world is perfect. But if you can sure as hell try your best to be perfect, damn, man, I want to get at least damn near as close as I can. And I feel like by me being my biggest, you know, I'm just the hardest person on myself. And I feel like that's going to cause me to just level up every time and get better and better. And I feel like if I continue to do that, then I'll reach a level that's just, you know, beyond belief. So.
And I was going to say, it seems like the work ethic has really extended through a few combat sports, like having a pair of amateur MMA bouts per Sure Dog and a pair of gloved boxing bouts. But it seems like this is the particular combat sport you've, like, I guess, especially sank your teeth into and have been really, I guess, seeing that, you know, success within. Can you kind of speak to that? Like, do you kind of see that being the case also?
Well, you know, I fought MMA in New York before it was legal. I was fighting in clubs. Like, a lot of my fights are not even documented or even, like, they were not even sanctioned because, you know, MMA wasn't legal in New York. So, you know, a lot of people don't know that. A lot of people see, oh, yeah, he's 1-1 in MMA. It's actually not true. I've had a lot more fights than that. I've had a ton of kickboxing matches, which is not even up there either. You know, it is what it is. I feel like when I moved to North Carolina, I had an MMA fight. It was amateur. I knocked a dude out in, like, 23 seconds or something like that. And then I went with a long period of backouts. It was over a year and a half of people backing out, literally showing up, making weight, people not coming to the weigh-ins, people backing out the week of, people backing out the day before. So I was like, you know, this is ridiculous. I'm trying to go pro here. So I found, like, a loophole, which was pro boxing. If you want to become a professional fighter, the quickest way to do it is through boxing. You can be a bum off the fucking street and hop in the ring. So I went in and, you know, I went into some glove boxing. I fell in love with it. You know, naturally, I'm a striker, even though I do love jiu-jitsu and clinching. But, you know, I fell into it. And then I heard about some bare-knuckle tryouts in Alabama. I looked into the bare-knuckle. I'm like, these guys are getting paid for what I did for free at home. Like, this is fucking ridiculous. I was like, this is fucking ridiculous. I got to try this. This is, like, has me written all over it. I went to tryouts. I felt like when I went there, they already knew who the fuck they were going to pick, which was okay with me. I stood out. I know I stood out. I was definitely the most fluent moving there. I had headphones on. I was fucking dancing around. Nobody there fazed me. I got a call. Actually, I got a message from several management companies, but there was one that stuck out the most to me, and I signed with GOAT. And, you know, I've been on, like, a fucking rampage ever since.
Yeah, and you talk about your appreciation for the sweet science. That also seemed to come through in a recent photo I saw where you were getting in work with, you know, legendary coach Don Saxby at the revered Gleason's gym. So that must have been cool.
Oh, yeah, that was definitely a blessing right there alone. You know, I got a chance to, you know, tweak a little bit of the things that I do and, you know, kind of just reconstruct some ways I throw punches and see things. And, you know, it was nice. It's always nice to get a different point of view from a different perspective, of course, you know. You know, when you train with the same people and you know, some people see things different. Like, you and me can watch a fight. You can see you know, what this guy is doing wrong. I can see what he's doing right, but nobody's seeing what they're doing to make those things right and to make those things wrong. So it's always good to get that third, you know, that third eye, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I guess to that point, like just talking about how many combat sports you've been in, and also you saying you had a bunch of undocumented kickboxing fights, just kind of underscoring, I guess, the point that much more. Like, I guess just considering all the combat sports you've been in, what are some of the unique considerations to preparing for a bare knuckle fight as compared to some other sports? Because it's kind of interesting. It's almost like developing every like couple months, few months and everything like that. Like how people, I guess, galvanize their hands, how they curate sparring. Like some people use the 4 ounce MMA gloves. Like, can you speak to, I guess, some of the different considerations preparing for bare knuckle versus some other combat sports you've done?
Well, like, just to put it out there, all these people like preparing and doing all this weird shit to their fucking hands. I think it's preposterous. I think it's overthought. I think honestly, no matter what, you can fucking condition your hands as much as you get in there. You know, you're not conditioning your face, okay? You have metacarpals in your fucking hands that are going to break anyway. It doesn't matter. The knuckles are hard, but the bones behind it aren't as hard as the knuckles in front of it. Like, people are just fucking doing things to make themselves look cool. If you've seen my knuckles, if you can see them now, this is natural. I've had it like this even before bare knuckle. People have known. I've been in so many fights. Can you see my hand?
Yeah, well, you got some big knuckles, man.
Yeah, but that's from just years of actually fighting, like, you know, growing up in like the streets of Brooklyn and just being small and always having to prove myself to people and, you know, knocking motherfuckers out left and right. And, you know, like, some people know my story. That was one of the main reasons why I walked into a gym, is because, you know, I was just a fucking hot-headed kid, man. Just needed to do something and get the steam off without getting in trouble. And, you know, that's when I walked into a Tiger Showman's. And long story about that, and I've said that story too many fucking times, but back to you were saying, you know, all these people trying to do all these punching walls and punching, like, what? Like, huh? Like, dude, the fucking top of my head is going to be harder than you punching a piece of fucking wood. Like, I just don't get it. Like, you have to be in it. You have to be doing it. You can train as much as you want. You can't train your chin. Your chin is, you got it or you don't. Your hands could be hard, but your chin could be made of fucking marshmallows. You know, like, let's be real.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, man. I mean, definitely not wrong in that regard. And yeah, I find like certain fighters can go one way or the other with that. Like some fighters are kind of like, oh, well, I've been fighting for years. Like my hands are good. I don't need to, you know, do anything more to it necessarily. Like I'm pretty good to go. But I guess to your prior point of talking about how much combat sports really gave you, I guess, that outlet and that certain direction, it must be cool to kind of like, you know, see your daughters kind of getting involved in it a bit. Like I saw that your daughter was holding pads with you, and you were saying she's the best pad holder ever. So can you speak to that? Because that seems pretty cool.
Well, it's because it's like looking into the mirror, you know, like I'm seeing a young adult like my daughter, and it's like, I know she doesn't want to fight. I know she doesn't want to do it. But you know what? When she's there with her father, it's a bonding moment. She's having fun with me. We're becoming one. You know, I feel like we're such in like a moment at that time. It's just such a surreal moment, just being there with her and her being able to do that for me. It's like, you know, looking at her when she was 3 years old and she first started putting gloves on to now, it's like, wow. And it's not like she does it every day. It's like, you know, every couple weekends I'll be like, hey, honey, throw the gloves off. Let's move around a little bit. Okay, Dad, you know, and that's the beauty of it. You don't have to worry about, you know, her not being able to defend herself, because I'm sure she'll break somebody's face.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure she's good to go with you kind of at the helm, teaching her a couple tricks and stuff like that. So I don't think that's anything that one needs to consider. I think she'll be pretty well equipped in that regard. But something that I thought to touch on too, because I'm, you know, familiar with him through like, you know, hip hop culture and just battle rap in general and stuff like that. I saw you had a bit of a video with Nems recently. Can you talk about that? Like, how did that come about?
Well, see, a lot of people know who he is. You know, he's a really relatively popular guy right now. And, you know, I went over there. I've been talking to him for a while. I was actually hoping for him to come out and perform as I was coming out. But that was that time I was supposed to be fighting in Florida, which didn't happen, the Hollywood, Florida card. But, yeah, I went there and told him who I was fighting, and he was like, yeah, let's do a fucking video. Fuck that guy. And I was like, fuck yeah. So, you know, we did a video, and then I tagged old Tyler in it. And then the shit that really got to me was, like, it's good to go back and forth, but don't like, contradict yourself. Like, he's over here. He has a video because technically he still has not signed his contract. It's true. He has still technically not signed his contract, okay? But we all know he's broke, so he's going to sign it. Long story short. He does a video with Palomino. Palomino guaranteeing, oh, we're going to sign it. Everything's going to happen. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Like, speaking for him as if he's his fucking father. And then having Tyler sit right there like, yeah, I'm going to come for you. And then they're like, okay, bro. Like, cool story. And then I do a video with a fucking famous rapper over here. And then his people are like, oh, you got to get your friend to speak for you. And like, bro, are you guys fucking stupid? Like, what? Like, you guys make no fucking sense. Like, I just thought it was weird. Like, you know, what's good for the goose is not good for the gander sometimes, I guess, right?
So you were almost kind of saying to yourself, don't you ever disrespect me, for lack of a better way to phrase it.
Yeah, don't ever fucking disrespect me making a video with your daddy, then I can't make a video with a famous rapper, you fucking woke.
No, that was just funny to see, man. I've been familiar with Nems for, you know, a few years now, I guess, and good to see him succeeding in certain social media lanes. And I appreciate your insights. I guess one of the last things I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on, because you're kind of known at this point for having some pretty, you know, cool masks during the walkout, like, obviously not blowing the surprise, but can we expect a similar kind of dynamic for this entrance here?
Since Bare Knuckle's been pushing the whole King of the Carolinas thing, which I was doing just as like a fucking spoof for the last fight, I think we might just have to roll with this one again. The outfit's gonna look nice, but yeah, I'm going in here, and that's the thing, man. Like, I'm happy to even be here. I'm just happy to be doing what is a side job. This is like, people don't get it. This is some people's lives, and people live. This is my fucking hobby. Ain't that some shit? That's some shit. This is people's lives. They pour into everything. This is my fucking side gig. This is a part-time job. This is like something I do, like cutting grass on the weekend. Like, I'm blessed, bro. Like, I'm blessed, and I'm happy where I'm at. And I put it in the work, but it's still like, what the fuck? You know? It's weird, man. It's just weird. Like, you got people who fucking, oh, I'm sleeping in my car, and do it. Bro, I get a fucking job, bro. Like, what do you do? I'm sorry. I just had to touch base on that, you know?
I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't follow that up, though, and ask you what your, you know, main gig is, if this is your side hustle.
Oh, I'm a correction officer, full-time correction officer, man. I've been a correction officer almost 8 years now.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, good you're getting that consistent work and stuff like that. That's kind of interesting. Is there ever someone that you're interacting with in your job that knows about the bare knuckle? Is that kind of common or a bit of an anomaly?
Oh, they all know, man. The inmates know, the officers know, everybody knows. I'm not a dickhead, though. Like, I'm like probably the most approachable person there is. I'm just a normal guy. I don't act better than anybody. Don't know, act tougher than nobody. I just act like me, you know. If you want to be a dickhead, I'm gonna treat you like a dickhead. You're gonna be a nice guy, I'm gonna be a nice guy. Like, that's it. You get what you give, you give what you get. Like,
yeah, I definitely feel that, man. I agree with that sentiment, but I do want to be mindful of your time and schedule. Like I was saying from the top, you've given me a lot of great insights, which I do appreciate. But just in saying that, is there any kind of parting final thought you might want to add as we're wrapping up here, man?
I think it's a true blessing just to even be on this stage and fighting and just doing what I love. Like, I love doing this. It's fun. I enjoy it. And that's what separates me from a lot of these fighters. I think these guys got into fighting. I was born into this shit. Like, I legit was born into this, you know? I didn't choose it. It chose me. And I think that's why I genuinely enjoy it. Because I don't have to be getting paid for this. I could fight that dude on the street. You can fight in a parking lot. Like, I don't care. Like, And I really do truly appreciate everybody who has, you know, supported my journey, who has, you know, hated on my journey, because even all those people who are hating, they're still tuning in to watch. So by you watching, you're still giving me views. So yeah, regardless, man, I'm just so appreciative, man. Just, you know, I'm just so appreciative, and I appreciate everybody who's followed my journey and who supports me. That's pretty much it, brother.
Yeah, definitely a good point to end things off on. And yeah, very much was excited for this fight before talking to you, but definitely, you know, compounding that much more after talking to you, man. So yeah, hopefully we can rush up to, you know, May 12th here and get right to BKFC 42. But, you know, until then, you enjoy the rest of your day, and thanks so much for the great insights, man.
I appreciate it, man. Listen, if you gotta hit him hard.
All right, have a good one, man. Thanks.
You too, bro.
All right, on this episode of Bouts Talkin' Bouts, excited to be talking to an individual set to compete at BKFC 42, and that goes down on May the 12th. And it is the headlining attraction, a very intriguing bout. As I said, we have Tony Soto knuckling up and toeing the line against Tyler Goodjohn, and great getting to have Tyler back on the show. How are you doing there, man?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Happy to be back. I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, great getting to, you know, be back in a headliner and everything, I would imagine. Like, what was the initial set of thoughts when, you know, Tony Soto was the particular opponent? Like, what was the, I guess, initial temperament when the bout offer came your way for May 12th?
You know, what's going down with this fight with Tony Soto, and then the next two we're headlining in South Carolina. So, yeah, you know, this is this is because of me. I called for the fight.
And was this a guy at all on your radar at all prior to this? It seems like there's been a bit of banter that's kind of been, I guess, ramped up with you guys as this bout offer has kind of, you know, been locked in and stuff like that. Like, has there been a bit of history with you guys? Like, how would you, I guess, describe the dynamic? Like, it seems like there's a bit of banter at the very least. Like, how would you, I guess, describe all of that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's not really been any real history between us, but you know, he's been, you know, doing his thing, winning and winning by stoppage. You know, he's creeping up the rankings. So me, you know, like anyone who's making a bit of noise, I want to take him on. Look, at the end of the day, like I say, you know, the guy's got some wins on his record, stoppages and everything else, but he hasn't fought anyone with you know, any real reputation yet. So we're gonna find out what he's all about, and you know, I'm gonna welcome him to the big leagues of BKFC.
And that kind of reads as the dynamic to this fight for me too. Like, obviously Tony has impressed by virtue of him being unbeaten and getting the finishes, but you certainly would be like a bigger, I guess, name value opponent slash step up, like not being disrespectful to any of his previous opposition. But it also strikes me as a good chance for you to like reassert yourself back into the landscape, like just in terms of getting back to the win column. Like, people know your resume as a British BK champion and stuff like that. Like, would you say that's the dynamic for this fight?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I was actually meant to be fighting on the Delray a few weeks back, that got cancelled. A few opponents got chucked at me, and it was like, you know, my management and everyone wanted me to have a little bit of a like a comeback fight, a little, you know, easy fight to get back into. And I'll be honest with you, you know, at this point in my career, those fights do not interest me. You know, they just don't interest me. You know, to keep motivated and keep training the way I do, I want to be in legitimate fights against people that are going to come and have a go. That's why, you know, I contacted BKFC and said, look, you know, this guy's 4-0. It's time he stepped up and stopped fighting debutants. And yeah, coming at it with a real fighter in BKFC. So, yeah, you know, it's his chance to obviously impress on the big stage and show that he's the real deal. And it's a chance for me to, you know, get back in the winning column, like you say, and then get back into title contention.
Yeah, and I mean, even that being said, I don't think you're necessarily that far off from that. Like, even in the context of talking about, you know, getting back to the win column, like, I mean, you were in there with a guy like Luis Palomino, who's like the number one pound for pound fighter in the sport, obviously. And then the last time out, a relatively, I would say, competitive fight against James Lilly. Like, sometimes the unanimous decision tag kind of paints a certain picture, but definitely was a competitive outing in that context. And he's obviously very highly rated in the weight category. So it doesn't seem like you've really like lost a great deal of traction, at least in like title contention kind of sense. Like, do you also kind of feel that, like, not resting on any laurels, like you want to, you know, get back to it and stuff like that, but it doesn't feel like they're, you know, damaging losses, quote unquote?
No, I mean, you know, they're against, you know, the pound for pound number one and the number one ranked at 155. So, I mean, you know, it's not like I've lost to nobody's, but, you know, like I say, yeah, it's, you know, I want to get back in the title contention as quick as possible. I'm not interested in fighting debutants and guys with losing records and things like that. You know, I want to be taking on these unbeaten guys. You know, it puts a pep in my step in training to know, you know, I'm going up against these guys that are trying to make waves. And yeah, I just, it's an interesting fight. It's a great fight. Like I say, it's a massive opportunity for Tony. As much.
Yeah, and it seems like there's been a great deal of difference from, you know, the last time we talked relative to where you seem to be at now, because the last time we spoke was a bit before your BKFC debut there, and just really seems like you've changed a lot in your life. Like, you were talking about kind of at one point, like a bit after that debut, about like things like sex addiction and kind of getting out of the, you know, adult film kind of work you were doing. And I saw a relatively recent post saying you were kind of like abstaining from the cannabis a little bit, like taking certain, you know, breaks and stuff like that at the very least. Like, how much has, I guess, your lifestyle changed relative from the last time we talked to kind of where you're at now?
I mean, to be honest, I've done a complete 360. I mean, no, I'll be the first one to say, look, you know, I was in a bit of a tailspin. I mean, what people have to realise with my BKFC debut, I come over in the middle of the pandemic, I had to quarantine in a different country to get into the US. I couldn't take any type of training team with me. I mean, I've done it all off my own back. Do you know what I mean? And I was going through a hell of a lot in my personal life. I don't want to, you know, make excuses and all that kind of stuff, because at the end of the day, I still got it done. But I was going through a hell of a lot in my personal life. And yeah, it was, like I say, it was a bit of a tailspin, really. So, you know, in terms of where I'm at now, I'm a different person. I'm a different person, totally. I'm totally and utterly dedicated to what I'm doing right now. I've come off the cannabis, which was, you know, to me was a real big part of my life, actually. You know, I haven't been smoking for about 14 weeks, and I was just going through a bad stage with my mental health, basically. And I've really turned it around. You know, this is, you know, I don't want to sound cliche, but it's been life changing, this camp. You know, I've really, really dedicated and sacrificed myself. And, you know, when I come out with that win on May 12th, you know, it's going to mean much more to me than just the win itself. You know, I've really, I've turned things around in my own life, personal life as well.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, it reads like an earnest attempt to make a lifestyle change, like not even just for your career, but just for better, you know, quality of life. So great to hear that you seem to be, you know, having that and everything, man.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, it's like I say, you know, it really has been life changing. I mean, a lot of that is obviously down to Luis Palomino, who's brought me out here to be part of his team. And, you know, everything's worked out for the positive. I've spending lots of time with Eric El Tigre Castellanos, who's bringing the best out of me in my boxing. It's just great. I'm happy. I'm really happy. Like I say, this is a big fight for me in terms of, you know, the fight game, but also my life, because I've come through a lot in the last 2 months.
And I love that you brought up that part of the relationship with Palomino. Like, I obviously mentioned when you guys had your championship fight, but it seems like you guys have grown very close as training partners, and just like there's a great sense of camaraderie since then. Can you kind of, you know, speak to that, you know, permutation of the relationship, like how you guys started like really training together and stuff like that thereafter? Like, it seems like you guys are, you know, good friends now and stuff like that, and I imagine would pay huge dividends training with the top guy in the sport.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. You know, it's a great relationship that me and Luis have got. It was born, you know, it was birthed in a pretty mad way, really, with us fighting. But yeah, man, I'm very blessed to have his experience and, you know, and his support. Do you know what I mean? Everything that, you know, I know that he's looking out for my career and he wants the best for me. That's why I'm here. He wants the best for me in my career and in my life as well. And he's a huge part of the reason why I'm feeling the way I am right now. And yeah, like I said, I'm very blessed to have that. You know, not everyone will get to, you know, will get that gift that he's given me. So yeah, I have massive, massive respect for him.
Yeah, for sure. A great guy to be getting in that work with, to say the very least. But yeah, it's just, I love seeing some of the different posts, like just kind of illustrating the, you know, journey you've had. Like, I saw you had a post saying a year ago I was sleeping in a freezing cold warehouse selling off gym equipment, and now it seems like you're obviously in a much, you know, better place and everything. Like, how much do those different moments just, like, you know, galvanize your resolve and everything like that, just being able to navigate those things and adapt and overcome and everything?
Yeah, it really has been a crazy few years. I mean, you know, I haven't put everything out on social media and stuff about it, but, you know, the way, like I say, that's why, you know, this fight's going to be such a big fight for me, because I really have turned things around. Like I say, a year ago, I was living in a freezing cold warehouse. I was selling my clothes to try and get money to pay my bills and everything else. You know, I was in a bad, bad place. And to see where I am now, you know, it's pretty, you know, pretty incredible. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's, I've always said it, look, my life at some stage, when I bring a book out and everything else, it'll get made into a movie, man. I'm from a very, very small city of 20,000 people, country, community. My dad's a small, you know, a small farm, and I'm living out in Miami, training and with Cubans, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, South Americans. You know, I'm living the dream, man. And it's been through hard work and perseverance, you know, nothing else. So yeah, one day the book will come out and people will be like, damn, yeah, he done some things. Do you know what I mean? He done it.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey since the days at Haddenham ABC under Mick Sawyer, right?
Yeah, hell yeah. You know, as a 10-year-old fat kid, you know, my mum and dad took me to the boxing gym just to lose weight. I lost my first 6 fights as an amateur. Again, you know, perseverance, hard work. You know, I ended up winning national titles as an amateur, professional boxing titles as a professional boxer. Had my license taken away for the most stupid thing ever. Still didn't give up, turned over to bare knuckle, become bare knuckle world champion in the other promotion, and now I'm over here in Miami, you know, doing my thing here. So it's some story, do you know what I mean? I'm only 32 next month, so plenty more to come. And you know, I hope I can inspire other people to chase their dreams like I have.
Yeah, I would think so, for sure, man. And just the way you talk about the game, like, you strike me as a very analytical person that's always trying to, like, you know, grow in a very measured, particular way in what they're doing. And just the fact that you last competed in August, I would think that there's a lot of skills that, you know, have been sharpened that much more. Like, without, I guess, giving away any aspects of your game plan or general approach, what would you say some of those areas of your game are that have been especially refined since the last time we've gotten to see you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, with the last fight, obviously it didn't go the way that I wanted it to. You know, the biggest disappointment for me, you know, I'd only got to spend, like, about 10 weeks with my new training team. And, you know, there was a lot of things that I'd worked on and learned. But for me personally, you know, I take full responsibility with the last fight. I went out there far too aggressive early on. and this is bare knuckle fighting. You know, I got cut, my eyes shut, my ear was in half. So, you know, I was fighting blind for 3 rounds. So it meant that, you know, I had to resort back to fighting with my heart instead of my skills. So, you know, this time, you know, I've learned from my lessons and you know, got back to my training team here in Miami, and we're just perfecting all the stuff that, you know, we were going through before. I've had more time to spend with my trainer, Tigre. And I'm just in a better place. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, I'm not, like I say, I'm not going to make excuses or anything like that. But, you know, I'm just, a happy fighter is a dangerous fighter. And I'm definitely in a much, much better place compared to what I was in August. You know, and so you're going to see the best of me.
And you seem very, like, I mean, you're talking about how, like, your story could be made into a movie, and just some of your posts seems very mindful of, like, what your legacy will eventually be, like, in a way that, I guess, informs your, you know, current pursuit of greatness and everything. And it seems like the profile of BKFC just also really keeps growing in a big way. So I guess to that point, does that kind of seem like a perfect storm in a sense? Like, just as BKFC has more spotlight and notoriety and, I guess, you know, combat cachet, for lack of a better way to phrase it, like, it would seem to benefit that, you know, end of you wanting to have a legacy whereby a lot of people are really, you know, checking it out. Can you kind of, I guess, speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a great believer that everything happens for a reason. And, you know, even going back to, you know, having my license taken away as a professional boxer, you know, like, it forced me into bare knuckle, and I'm here. You know, I never would have been, you know, even dreamed really of being in America fighting, training as a professional boxer, because I just didn't have the backing, you know. And people who are in the know with combat sport know that if you're not got the backing of a big promoter or a big manager or anything, it doesn't matter how good you are, you know, you're just not going to get the opportunity. So everything happens for a reason, man, you know. And that's why I'm here. And like I say, I want to carry on doing what I'm doing and just keep inspiring people that, you know, if you're willing to put that hard work in, and like I say, the perseverance, you will get there in the end. I mean, I'm 32 next month. I've been fighting 22 years, but I'm getting there now. I'm getting there. You know, I've just had to grit my teeth and get on with it, you know. And yeah, man, I'm here, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And what a journey it's been, and many more chapters, you know, to unfurl in this story. But just curious, like, with this, you know, Tony Soto fight, like, do you have any particular, I guess, visualization of how you see things going? Like, I guess I'm kind of being presumptuous, but you strike me as a guy that maybe visualizes a lot of, you know, different outcomes and places the fight could go. And I guess to that point, is there, like, a predominant visualization you have for this Tony Soto fight?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we actually had a bit of a few words yesterday on social media, and he said to me, you think I'm going to be a walk in the park? And look, I've been a professional fighter for 13 years. I don't, you know, I expect the very best version of Tony Soto on May 12th. And like I said to him, if you're not the best version of yourself, you're going to get chewed up and you're going to get spat out, because I've been born in adversity, man. I really have. You know, my whole career, my whole fight career, I've been up against it. And, you know, no matter what happens on May 12th, you know, even if I get put over, I get cut, whatever happens, I'll be in there till the very end. And I'm gonna take him to the deepest waters that he's ever been. And I don't think he's quite ready for it. Like I say, he's been showing off and on all these socials, knocking out these debutants and things like that. I'm a different kettle of fish, man. I'm a BKFC veteran. I've been there, I've done it, I've got the t-shirt. And he's gonna find out. I'm gonna take him into the deepest waters, man. I'm gonna drown him.
I was gonna say, speaking of getting the t-shirt, it seems like you're rocking the bare knuckle Viking shirt there. Where can people grab that t-shirt?
Do you know what? Someone actually made this for me, but I will put it out, because I said that, look, there'll be people that will want this t-shirt. It's a cool t-shirt as well. I've just, like I say, I've been so wrapped up with training I haven't even really been that active on my social media. I've just kept myself to myself, but get this fight won, and then I'll be releasing some more teachers, that's for sure.
Yeah, very much getting the sense that you're very hyper-focused, and I was excited for the fight, but after talking to you, definitely growing the excitement for sure, man. But like I was saying before, I also want to be mindful of your time and schedule too. So to that point, is there any final parting thought you might want to add as we're wrapping up, Tyler?
I just want to thank my sponsor, Daniel Lawrence Plumbing and Heating, who are from back home in Ely, Cambridgeshire, where I'm from. Lawson Civil Engineering, they're two companies that have backed me all the way. I mean, don't get me wrong, look, you know, I'm out here training, but it also takes some very loyal sponsors who believe in me and know that, you know, I can achieve what I've set up to do. So they've, you know, they've backed me all the way. I've had a very loyal friend of mine, Steve Welsh, who's another guy who's backed me all the way. Florida Yachts International, who brought me over with the work visa. Again, I wouldn't be here without their loyal support. So there's a lot of people to thank, and, you know, I just, like I say, for the last 10, 12 weeks, I've been grinding twice a day, every day, you know, so I'm ready to show out on May 12th.
Yeah, it's going to be a very intriguing lightweight fight, definitely one that I think can inform the division's hierarchy through the rest of the year, and very much looking forward to this fight at BKFC 42. So thanks so much for providing great insights and coming on, man. But until then, you have a good rest of your day, Tyler.
Thank you very much, Dylan. Appreciate it, bro.